Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your listening post for politics Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We are glad you're with us. And Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, it is good to have you on board again, as always.
Yes, good to be here, Dennis.
Plenty to talk about. Last week was the second final week deadline in the state legislature. Now, that usually means that in order to continue to stay alive, a bill has to have passed either the House or Senate and a committee in the other chamber. Several GOP priorities stalled, but negotiations on those bills are going to continue with the help of some legislative workarounds. It is a bit confusing, and Laura and I are here to try to cut through all that confusion. So, Laura, let's start out with among the bills that did not make it, but still might be in the mix, Governor Reynolds' plan on private school scholarships. Neither the House nor Senate has debated it on the floor. So how is this still alive potentially?
Well, I think this one may have a tough road in the House. The Senate, I think it's clear the Senate would support it. The Senate passed something very similar to this last year. But I think the Senate is waiting to see what can get through the House rather than the approach they took last year was Senate Republicans passed a bill, sent it to the House, and it just got buried. So I think that everyone's waiting to see whether House leaders can get 51 of those 60 House Republicans on board. And right now, there just seem to be several Republicans in rural areas who think that this is going to take too much money away from small school districts.
So the Senate moved it to what's called the unfinished business calendar. How does that keep it alive after the funnel?
Yes, well, the unfinished business calendar, you know, somebody was asking me about that last week. Most bills that get sent to unfinished business never come back. But in theory, they could come back. It's just a way of keeping something alive. The funnel deadline, I pay less attention to it than I used to, honestly, because so many times leadership can pull something out that should have been dead and it gets passed near the end of the session. And one of those ways is the unfinished business calendar. But usually bills that get sent to unfinished business don't really see the light of day again.
So another bill that ostensibly did not make it out of this second funnel was criminal penalties for teachers over obscene content. Senator Jake Chapman's been pushing that one. Is this one actually dead or does it still have a chance to come back?
I think this one is really dead because House Speaker Pat Grassley, when he was speaking to some reporters on Thursday, indicated that in his caucus, there's just not support for this. And he was fairly adamant that this is not going anywhere. And I think that's why it didn't come up for a vote on the Senate floor also. I mean, we don't know. There are 32 Republican senators. They only need 26 to get it through. But it could be that there are some Republican senators who would prefer not to vote on this one. It's interesting that it wasn't brought to the floor, even in the Iowa Senate, where Jake Chapman is the number two ranking Senate Republican. But this bill is definitely the criminal penalties for teachers is dead. I think that some of the other education policy proposals could still be alive, though.
What about the Parents' Bill of Rights, which would have required teachers to share their curriculum and all student records with parents? Does that have a shot?
Well, I think some version of a Parents' Bill of Rights might go up, but I think the fiscal note, the way that bill was written, or at least a similar bill, there may be more than one bill in the mix, but it would have required teachers to post all the curriculum materials online in August and then again in January. So basically everything that they would teach for the year. So it would hamper teachers because if something came up like this Ukraine war, they wouldn't be able to talk about it in class because it wasn't known at the beginning of the semester. But the fiscal note by the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency came out and they determined that this would cost an extra $27 million a year across all of the school districts for the extra IT work and the extra teaching work because they'd have to get substitute teachers to cover the time that it would take teachers to do this. So I just think that this is not, that part of it is not very feasible, but other aspects of the Parents' Bill of Rights that might give some sort of fig leaf of, you know, parents more ways to challenge curriculum material or more ways to challenge library books, some version of that kind of thing may still get to the floor and get to the governor's desk.
Now, House Republicans say they are not giving up on trying to pass legislation banning a coronavirus vaccine mandate and capping damages in commercial vehicle lawsuits. Those seem completely unrelated. It was part of an embarrassing defeat last week, a rare public defeat on the part of a majority party. Why don't you go into that one?
Yeah. So the one of the advantages of being in the majority party is you control the agenda and the calendar. So nothing comes to the floor of the Iowa House or Senate without the leaders wanting it to come to the floor. And typically they never bring anything to the floor unless they know they have the votes to pass it. So what happened last Wednesday is the House Republicans brought this combined bill. It's being called a Frankenstein bill because they've been trying to put together different pieces. Some versions had the unemployment benefit cuts. This version just had this trucking industry liability shield part and more protections for employees who don't want to get coronavirus vaccines. They combined this in one bill, and actually they were going to add it as an amendment to an existing bill so they wouldn't have to run it through the committee process. And clearly the House Republican leaders thought they had 51 votes behind this thing. But when they called up another unrelated bill and tried to amend it with this combination of COVID vaccine and trucking industry liability, the amendment was ruled not germane. And then there was a motion made to suspend the rules so that they could vote immediately on this amendment. And it was that procedural motion that failed. Only 48 people voted for it. Again, there are 60 Republicans in the Iowa House. And you just never see members of the majority party vote against the majority on a procedural motion. I mean, I can't think of when that's happened. That I've been following the Iowa legislature for 15 years, and I just can't think of any example of that. The only time I can think of, the last time I can remember that House leaders brought a bill to the floor and they didn't have the votes to pass it was in 2009, when the House was under Democratic control and they were trying to pass a bill on establishing a prevailing wage standard in Iowa, and they just fell short of the 51 votes there. But usually the House leaders, I mean, and the Senate leaders, they know how to count, and they just don't put anything on the calendar unless they have the votes. This trucking industry liability thing, by the way, it was a huge issue for the House leadership last session. There was a slightly less public, embarrassing defeat last session where they were going to bring it up, and then the majority leader ended up pulling it because they realized that they didn't have the 51 votes. So this has just been an issue for them. They're very determined to pass it. There are some very large Republican donors who own trucking companies, and they really want this bill. So I am not ruling out the possibility that this bill comes back. I think the COVID vaccine, it might be difficult because there are people in the caucus who don't want to limit what employers can do. And then there are people in the Republican caucus who think that bill didn't go far enough in protecting people against having to get a vaccine. So they may just have trouble finding the sweet spot on that bill.
Another bill that ostensibly should be dead because it did not reach the floor debate in the House or the Senate is the proposed jobless unemployment changes, moving Iowans from 16 weeks of unemployment, from 26 weeks down to 16, something the governor really wants to do. So since this never made it to the floor of either house, how is it still alive?
Well, it's still alive because leadership can do whatever they want, frankly. So I think it's possible that they will take a bill, an unrelated bill again, and if they craft an amendment that they can get a majority behind, they might amend an existing bill and do this maneuver where they then suspend the rules so they can consider a non-germane amendment. I would say that probably what the governor wants, cutting unemployment benefits from 26 to 16 weeks, something that severe, it doesn't look like there's enough support for that. But the governor did make this a fairly prominent part of her condition of the state address in January. So I think that it's possible that some token version of unemployment cuts might get to her desk. It really depends on how hard the governor's office pushes for something on this so she can declare victory. And it may be that the governor doesn't necessarily want to campaign on this. And so in that case, it may be dead. But I thought it was interesting, and I guess we're going to talk about some more polls later, but the latest Des Moines Register Iowa poll showed that a majority of Iowans oppose these unemployment benefit cuts, 53% oppose, 38% favor. However, that's a lot better than last year when they polled on this issue and 75% were opposed. And it really shows you that just the fact that the governor was out publicly supporting these unemployment benefit cuts, that really moved a large number of Iowans to say that they support them. So I think that some version of it might yet pass, but probably not the whole package that the governor wants.
So House lawmakers did introduce a bill through an unusual maneuver last week, filing an amendment to a completely unrelated piece of legislation, and replacing that proposal with language that would block any carbon pipelines from using eminent domain authority before March of next year. Now, this is an interesting bill because It's backed by some Republicans. One would think that they would want the pipeline companies to have complete reign over being able to buy and do whatever they want. But that's not the case here.
This was really fascinating on several levels. First of all, yes, in the state government committee, they took a bill that was already ready to get through the funnel. It was really too late last week to try to pass a whole new bill in one chamber and then get it through a committee in the other chamber. So the state government committee took a bill that had already passed the Iowa Senate, and it just needed to get through one committee in the Iowa House, and it was on an unrelated subject. And yes, they amended it with this text about eminent domain, just so that this bill, this piece of legislation is through the funnel. What I found fascinating was Bobby Kaufman, who chairs the state government committee, he said in January that he was going to try to do something on eminent domain this year. And then just a few days later, he backpedaled and said, you know, I don't want to undermine the playing field here. And these companies are already proposing these carbon pipelines, and they've been negotiating with landowners. And we need to make sure that everyone knows that the rules don't change in the middle of the game. And so I thought, okay, you know, leadership came down and told Bobby Kaufman, you're not doing anything on eminent domain. And I found out last week, and I confirmed this from multiple sources, that Pat Grassley held a forum in his home county, Butler County, a very Republican county. And there were a lot of people there who are very against this carbon pipeline. And supposedly they didn't want to sign Pat Grassley's nominating petitions. That's how angry they are that the legislature is not taking action on this. And so days later, suddenly Bobby Kaufman is out there with a new bill that would at least limit eminent domain for 1 year. Now, this is far short of what a lot of Iowa activists would like to see, but it was a very large move away from the position that House Republicans had in January.
That's really a great inside story about Pat Grassley and why, how this may have come down. So again, interesting bedfellows here, because some Democrats are supporting this, Republicans supporting this. It's quite interesting.
Yes, I mean, there always have been some Republicans who have wanted more limits on eminent domain. Eminent domain is when land can be seized. And traditionally, the government can only seize your land for a project that has a true public purpose. And what's controversial about these pipelines is a lot of people say these are private projects. There's really no legitimate public purpose that's served in Iowa. And so the eminent domain shouldn't be allowed for something like this that's only going to enrich a few companies. That's what the dispute is about. And in the Iowa Senate, there were a Republican senator from up in Sioux County, Northwest Iowa, very conservative area. He introduced a bill that would greatly limit eminent domain for private projects. It didn't go anywhere because the leadership really didn't want it to go anywhere. Now, some people will tell you that this bill that Bobby Kaufman had just pulled out of his hat last week, that this is more of an election year maneuver than anything else, because it just puts a moratorium on eminent domain for this kind of project for 1 year until March 2023. And so at that time, once the Republicans get through the election, they could come back next year and say, well, actually, we've decided we don't want to restrict eminent domain for these pipelines. But I think all over the state, I think legislators of both parties have been hearing from people on this issue. The opposition to these pipelines is pretty well organized. And I saw a photo, a guest author wrote a piece about this for my website, and the photo that ran at the top was from Butler County, again, Pat Grassley's home county, Chuck Grassley's home county. And there were nearly 100 people out there at a protest. This is not a large population county. They were out there at an anti-pipeline protest. So it's really an issue that has united a lot of people across the spectrum. And so I think if this eminent domain bill comes to the floor of the Iowa House or Senate, I think the votes would be there to pass it.
We'll be following it, and you can find out what happened right here on Capitol Week every week. It is 13 and a half after the hour, daylight saving time, non-daylight saving time, whatever time you're on. We're glad you're listening to us. You are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capitol Week. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We're here every week at this time to talk politics, Iowa style, how it's affecting all of us. All right, bills that survived the second funnel. We talked about a coronavirus vaccine mandate, vaccine requirements in schools, has passed the House and remains active. The use of ivermectin, that's a wild one. That is also still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I haven't heard the governor talk about that, but I suspect if it gets to her desk, she will sign it.
That's the controversial drug that some people are taking to fight the coronavirus, though there's no evidence that it has any impact on the coronavirus. More teen employees would allow 16-year-olds to provide care to school-age children without additional supervision. That one is still alive.
Yeah, I don't really know on this one whether this one really has legs. It is still alive, though. I should say, in the ivermectin bill, that the The key of that bill is that if you were severely ill and you could find a doctor to prescribe it to you, you would the hospital would have to give it to you. It would not force doctors to prescribe ivermectin.
Right, right. Biofuels, that's a big one for Governor Reynolds, would require gas stations in Iowa to offer gasoline blend with 15% ethanol. That really is probably going to make it, isn't it?
Well, I'm surprised that this one hasn't made it yet. And I don't really understand, you know, last year, this one, there was a huge fight, didn't pass. The governor came back and said it's something she wants. It got through the House already. And so I thought, well, it gets on the way. And then I don't know why it hasn't come up yet in the Senate. I'm not sure what's going on there. It could just be that they didn't want to use the time on the calendar, but it just seems like they could have already gotten it to the governor's desk. And it just makes me wonder whether there are some people in the Senate who don't want that bill.
Permanent daylight saving time would transition Iowa to permanent DST, but only if the federal government passes a bill that would allow it. There was a commentary this weekend in the Des Moines Register about from their editorial writer, one of their writers. She would really like that because it would give more light in the evening. There's a downside, though. It gets darker in the morning. It stays dark longer in wintertime.
Yeah, kids would be walking to school in the dark in the winter. Of course, fewer kids are walking to school these days, but there what the U.S. Senate did pass by unanimous consent a bill that would transition to permanent daylight savings time. So if it got through the U.S. House and if President Biden signed it, then that would, in theory, allow something like this in Iowa to go into effect.
Yes, indeed. All right. We are just zooming along here. We have plenty more to go. There was word on this Monday that the Iowa House is proposing no increase to the State Board of Regents budget for next year. Not good news for the State Board of Regents.
No, because, of course, when you have a flat budget, the costs go up every year. And some of those costs you really can't negotiate. I mean, people's salaries, it's in their contract. It's going to be increased. And a large portion of the university's budgets are going towards salaries. So a flat budget from one year to the next is in real terms a cut. So that is going to sting. I don't know what the Senate side, the House and the Senate have yet to fully agree on budget targets. So this is one area, the higher education budget is one thing that they haven't fully agreed on yet, but that would be very good for the universities.
Also last week, Democrat Deidre DeGeer officially became a candidate for governor. She filed her nomination petition, and Democrat J.D. Scholten, a two-time loser in the 4th Congressional District, announced he's running for the state house.
Yes. So Deidre DeGeer is officially the only Democrat seeking the nomination. And since Governor Reynolds does not have a primary challenger, we already know the field is set for the governor's race. J.D. Scholten, this is the seat that covers the more Democratic part of Sioux City. And this is the seat that Chris Hall has represented for the last 12 years. And he announced that he wasn't seeking reelection. So far, there's no Republican candidate in this district against J.D. Scholten. I don't know. I assume the Republicans will end up nominating someone at a convention later. But I think that J.D. Scholten, he's pretty well known and pretty well liked in the Sioux City area. And I think he's probably favored to hold that seat.
Let's zoom through some Des Moines Register polls that came out last week. One of them involved Chuck Grassley, who, of course, is the Republican U.S. Senator, longtime senator, running for re-election this year. That was a little surprising in terms of its closeness.
Yes. I mean, Grassley, for many years, his approval rating was always in the high 60s, sometimes above 70%. And then there was a time when it was hovering around 60%. But in this age of polarization where we live, that his approval rating has just been on a steady downward trend for the last decade. And so just last year, it was measured below 50% for the first time. And this was the lowest approval that any Des Moines Register poll has found for Chuck Grassley since the early 1980s. And he's really mired in this mid-40s approval range. He does have slightly higher approval than disapproval, but just looking at the history of Chuck Grassley's career, these are pretty low numbers for him.
Now, one of the problems for a couple of the Democrats running against him, and there are three, two of them should be relatively well known, but they are not. Abby Finkenauer, former congresswoman, and retired Navy Admiral Mike Franken remain unknown to a lot of Iowans. Just under half do not know enough about Finkenauer to have an opinion, and two-thirds have no idea who Franken is.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Finkenauer held office for 4 years in the Iowa House and then for 2 years in the U.S. House of Representatives. So she is better known than Mike Franken. That's not too surprising. I mean, the good news for Chuck Grassley is he has millions of dollars in the bank. So whoever the Democratic nominee is, he's going to have a lot of money to define that person for Iowans who otherwise don't know enough about them to have an opinion. But Grassley's approval, what's saving him a little bit is that he has higher approval among independents than disapproval. Only about 2/3 of Republicans said that they approve of Grassley's performance. And that's also really low by historical standards. I mean, Kim Reynolds' approval among Republicans is significantly higher than that.
The other register poll was about Joni Ernst, the other Republican U.S. Senator from Iowa, who is not up for re-election this year. 44% of Iowans approve the job she's doing, 41% disapprove. Very close again, but again, she's under no pressure at this point.
Yeah, and she's in the opposite position where, so 77% of the Republicans like the job she's doing, but her approval among independents is lower than Chuck Grassley's approval. So that's why they have similar overall job approval numbers, but it's a little bit different in composition. But again, she's not up for re-election again until 2026.
And we should just briefly mention again, Joni Ernst, she made news on Monday afternoon with word that she had led a bipartisan congressional delegation to Poland and to Germany over the weekend. She encountered a significant number of Ukrainian refugees from the war. She says they seem to be shell-shocked. She is now calling for more aid to Ukraine.
Joni Ernst has been calling for more aid to Ukraine for some time. She actually was in Ukraine in the 1990s. But it was still part of the Soviet Union, early 1990s, as part of a college exchange program, an agricultural program. So she has a real affinity for the Ukrainian people. She joined the Senate's Ukraine caucus. I noticed this a few years ago when I was writing a different story related, frankly, to President Trump's conduct toward Ukraine and the impeachment there. I realized that Senator Ernst was part of the Ukraine caucus. But she has said for a long time that she wants us to be sending more aid to Ukraine. The Biden administration, I mean, we have provided more than $1 billion in military aid. The issue is that there are certain things that the Biden administration doesn't want to provide, airplanes, certain types of aircraft. And that's a sticking point. A former military source was explaining to me that one concern about that is that if you provide airplanes to Ukraine and then their military goes over into Russian airspace and uses those planes to take out some supply lines or things on Russian territory, Russia could view that as an escalation from the United States since it happened with our equipment.
President Biden is going to Europe this week, and we will have more information later this week and, of course, on Capitol Week next Monday night. Quickly through some other new polls, one showing that Iowans widely oppose legislation that would expand the legal risk that schools could face for carrying literature perceived to be obscene. That is Jake Chapman's love child bill, and most Iowans oppose it.
And even a majority of Republicans didn't support it. So I think that is really the death knell. I think any Republicans who were uncomfortable with that idea would be even more uncomfortable after seeing that poll. And I was struck by the fact that that was a statewide poll. So even among Republicans across the entire state, the majority aren't for criminal penalties for teachers and librarians. They 71% said that they opposed allowing parents to sue school districts over books they consider obscene. So Jake Chapman is running for re-election in a swing district, a suburban district that Joe Biden narrowly carried. And it's a pretty safe bet that if this idea is unpopular statewide, it's definitely unpopular in the district where he's running for re-election. So his Democratic opponent, Sarah Trone Garrett, I imagine that she will be reminding voters at every opportunity that this is what Jake Chapman wanted to do, wanted to use his power to accomplish in the Iowa Senate.
Let's talk about one more poll. And this shows that 2/3 of Iowans want lawmakers to ban drivers from holding cell phones or other electronic devices while they're driving. There is a bill pending in the legislature on that. 70% of Iowans favor that.
Yes, I mean, there really is a lot of distracted driving, and they have, I mean, I've seen conflicting information on this hands-free versus handheld cell phones. I mean, some people say that it's a bit of a false belief that if as long as you're hands-free, you're not distracted, because in some ways you can be talking on a hands-free device, and just the fact that you're having a different conversation can take your attention away from the road. So, but there is some data that shows that talking on a hands-free device is less distracting than talking on a handheld cell phone. So this is probably better than nothing. I think that traffic safety experts would probably tell you that the best thing would be just to ban the use of any kind of a cell phone while you're behind the wheel.
We have about 4.5 minutes left. There's our time cue, Laura. So we're going to zip here. Governor Reynolds made news last week that Iowa should focus on its educational system rather than change gun laws. In the aftermath of that March 7th shooting outside East High School, she said the tragedy is that our educational system is letting these kids down. That was controversial.
Yes. I mean, people were upset already because this tragedy happened and the governor didn't issue a statement right away. And normally when something terrible happens around the state, the governor's office issues a written statement within 24 hours or so. So I think there was already a simmering anger that the governor hadn't made any statement about this. And so then, you know, many days later, when she was asked about it at a media availability, and then these comments, a lot of people took offense. They felt that it came across as blaming educators and that it just wasn't the right tone. And of course, East High School is fed into from a part of Des Moines that is heavily Democratic. It's a majority minority high school, majority students of color. And so I think a lot of people were in the East High School community were unhappy with those comments.
And there was word last week that one Democratic congresswoman from Iowa, one Republican, had sent a letter to the head of the National Weather Service asking for information about why there were delayed tornado warnings the day deadly twisters hit the state on March 5th, and they want some answers.
Yes, and I think that the National Weather Service said there was some problem. I think it was related to their facility in Texas that something went out there. But, you know, in that kind of a severe weather situation, just every minute matters. And so even just giving people that the delay was between 2 and 3 minutes, and just that might make the difference between someone having enough time to get to shelter and not getting to shelter. So, yes, that was a bipartisan action by Cindy Axne, the Democrat representing most of central Iowa, and Republican Ashley Hinson, who represents most of northeast Iowa.
And let's quickly try to sort out what happened last week in court on the latest ag gag law. A divided federal appeals court had upheld the first of Iowa's ag gag laws, and now a judge ruled that the second such law is unconstitutional. Can you sort that out?
Yeah. Please. First state in the country to pass an ag gag law in 2012. And in 2019, a federal judge ruled that that law was unconstitutional, violation of the First Amendment. And so that's last year, the appeals court in the Eighth Circuit in a divided ruling, they held that the part of that bill that said that you can't you can't make false statements while trying to gain employment in an agriculture facility, they agreed that that was unconstitutional. But they said that making false statements in order to gain access or into a facility, they didn't agree that that part was unconstitutional. But meanwhile, in 2019, the Iowa legislature quickly responded to that federal court ruling striking down the first ag gag bill, and they passed a second one that was seemingly addressing some of the court's concerns. But really, I wasn't surprised by this ruling last week by the federal judge that said the second ag gag law was unconstitutional, because my reading of it during 2019 was that it really wasn't that different in substance from the first law. It said that you can't make false statements in order to gain access to an agricultural production facility if your intent is to cause harm to the facility. And so that is what I would consider, and what also the federal judge Stephanie Rose considered, a viewpoint-based restriction. So in other words, you could make a false statement to gain access to an agricultural facility if your purpose was to try to cheer it on and say great things about it, but you couldn't make the same tell lies to gain access to the facility if you had the intention to expose some kind of a mistreatment of animals. And so that's a classic example of when courts have looked on speech restrictions, and is it designed to target people with certain viewpoints or certain types of expressions? And so that was really the reason why the second ag gag law was struck down. Meanwhile, Iowa has passed a third ag gag law in 2020, which was more focused on trespass, which hasn't been challenged. And then they passed a fourth ag gag law last year that was also somewhat of a more focused trespassing statute. And that one has been challenged in court, but no federal court has heard the case yet.
Well, we're out of ag gags, and unfortunately, we're out of time. We didn't get through all of it, but we will. We'll come back to it next week, including Bobby Kaufman's latest explanation about why he flipped the bird during a speech at a state capitol rally. Will you be up for that, Laura?
I will. I'll be ready and willing.
All right. That is it. We are out of time. Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you so much, all of you listening. And you have been listening to Capitol Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will Zoom right back here in this time slot next week, when we'll have the latest on what's going on politically inside and outside the state capitol, we promise. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.